hand over to the city or at least by Miss Nikki. I don't know whether I talked to us or we tell us to the others. Then before that, we'll ask our friend, Siawule, and to introduce his team that is here.
Thanks, Chair. Chair I'm with the senior managers of ITEC who will be doing the presentation. Next to me is Nomore Somdag, senior manager in Tariff Investigations. And the gentleman is Marius Collins, senior manager in Import and Export Control. And the lady who is smiling is Karina Janssen van Buren, senior manager in Trade Remedies. And I'll be doing the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Can I ask the honourable members to come to the front, please? Can I hand over to Nikki, please?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Nikki Clear. I'm the Chief Director of Trade Negotiations at the Department of Trade and Industry. I'm the only official from the DDI that is here. I see that my colleagues from ITAC have got a number of presentations that they're giving, so I'll try and keep mine as short as possible. I'm going to talk about the policy environment that informs the trade negotiations, our trade policy, the approach to trade policy, the key policy parameters for negotiations, and then give a short update on the current negotiations that we are busy with, as well as the agreement that is concluded and the implementation of those. In terms of the policy environment that informs trade negotiations, we look basically at the National Development Plan, the National Growth Path, and the Industrial Policy, and that informs our trade policy that then, of course, informs our trade negotiations to a large extent. In terms of the National Development Plan, in terms of the objectives of Chapter 7, inter-regional trade in Southern Africa, we should increase from 7% to of trade to 25% of trade by 2030. That's one of the objectives. And South Africa's trade with regional neighbors increase from 15% of our trade to 30%. And you will see that this informs to a large extent that the focus we currently have on the negotiations on the continent, the tripartite trade negotiations, and free trade agreements that we will talk about a bit later, as well as the continental free trade negotiations that has just been launched. In terms of the actions, in terms of the National Development Plan that we're looking at is that we focus on trade penetration and diplomatic presence in fast-growing markets globally, including Africa. We look at implementing a focused regional integrated strategy with emphasis on key infrastructure areas in the regions like roads, rail, and ports. I'll speak about it a bit later, but that is one of the big problems in terms of trade, especially on the African continent, and that is something that we're focusing on. So as well in our negotiations in Africa, in the tripartite as well as the continental, we're not only looking at market integration, but we're also looking at infrastructure development and industrial development as part of the negotiations. we are also focusing on reducing red tape, corruption, and delays at border posts. So in our negotiations, that's also a big focus of ours, to have specific chapters that deals with customs and customs cooperation, and to try and address some of these issues that is creating a problem in terms of the trade on the continent, and even in terms of trade in the world. In terms of the National Growth Path, the National Growth Path has identified job drivers from infrastructure, industrial development, macro and micro economy issues, and institutional frameworks to increase jobs. There's emphasis that South Africa to grow. It needs strong partnerships with other countries on the continent, and again, this is one of the focuses that we have in terms of our negotiations. And for government to work, we need to identify viable new productive activities in the region, especially in SADC, and then now also going into the tripartite and into the continental, the whole continent of Africa, especially in agricultural value chains, in electricity, hydro and other green energy generation, and of course beneficiation of minerals and integrated manufacturing supply chain. So in Kaku, we've already started this process of identifying value chains in Kaku, where different countries can work together. There's a similar process in SADC, where we're looking at the industrial development plan as well. We look at the different value chains and how we can develop value chains across the borders. To also assist us and in Africa to integrate into the global value chains. And of course, as you know, beneficiation of minerals is also a key focus, not only for South Africa, but also for the whole of Africa, and that's also some of the issues that we're looking at. In terms of the industrial quality, this is the wrong slide that you see, but I think the correct one was provided. In terms of the industrial policy, we're looking at this diversification beyond the traditional reliance on minerals and mineral processing. So we want to increase our value-added exports. We want to move towards a knowledge economy, so there's also a focus on services. I'll speak about it a bit later, but we have now started services negotiations also on the African continent, and we are looking at a more labor-absorbing industrial core that will support economic development and also integration on the African continent. As such, the industrial objectives that set out in the industrial policy action plan lead to trade policy, informs the trade policy and the development of trade policy. There's a movement away from the narrow market integration approach that we used to follow, that focused only on the derogation and elimination of tariffs. And that's why, as I've indicated earlier, for example, in the tripartite free trade agreement negotiations, there's not only a focus on market integration, but also a focus on industrial policy development as well as infrastructure development as a region. We're also looking at a strengthening of our development trade policy, as I said, through our negotiations. And as such, trade has the potential to promote rapid growth through structural changes, but we need to be careful in terms of how we approach this in terms of negotiations. Where we open up the market, we need to look at the advantages of opening the market, but there are also some parts of the market that still need protection. We will not be able to open, and that is in terms of our consultations. We have a very intensive consultation process that I also will talk about a bit later. That is where that is key in the negotiation process and for us in developing our position in terms of the negotiations. As I said, Inter-Africa trade is key at the moment, our focus. Compared to other regions in the world, like the EU, NAFTA, Asia, South America, Africa has low levels of inter-regional trade. It's currently about 10% of our trade and expected to grow 13%. The aggregate figures distort the overall importance of international trade for African countries, because you take out the world, the trade in coal, the percentage of inter-Africa trade and the share of the trade of Africa actually increased 21%. So you can see these are important markets. Other African markets is important market for African countries. It's a very important market for South Africa, and it's a market that is growing for us. And that's also another reason for us to focus in terms of our negotiations on the integration on the African continent. Africa is the second most important export market for most African countries, fine with Europe, the same with South Africa. And the key issue for us is that most inter-African trade for South Africa essentially is a manufactured good. We provide a basis for regional industrialization that is that provide a basis for the growth of jobs and our economy, and that is why we again want to focus on the African continent in terms of our trade negotiations. South Africa, in terms of South Africa's trade policy, if you look at the nature of global competition, it has changed. The comparative advantage is not anymore the only determinant success in international trade. Therefore, there's a purposeful intervention by government to build and deepen production capacities, investment in human capital, research and innovation technology. And there's also a focus on strategic collaboration with different countries. And that also informs our trade policy. In terms of the trend in world trade, you'll see that the fastest growing exports in the world trade are non-resource based manufacturing again. This is a key for South Africa, and one of the issues that we want to grow the value added products and the exports of value added products. The emergence of global supply chains, manufacturing and services is also a big issue that is now being raised all over the world. And as a result, the production, production and bundling and a growing trade intermediate products. The trade in intermediate products is now more than 60% of world trade now in intermediate products. As a group, developing countries, exports is growing faster than the world average. Of course, Asia, with China in it, is still dominates the growth in exports, but Africa is also a growing market in terms of exports and growing faster than the old traditional countries like the European region and the US. In terms of our tariff policy, I won't go into this because I think ICAP will discuss this in detail, so maybe I can just keep this for now. In terms of our approach to trade policy, as I've indicated on more than one occasion now, is that we want to build on trade and investment relations with Africa. We want to consolidate and expand the developmental integration that is already started and in many cases far advanced in SACU, SADC, and the apartheid, and of course now also the continental free trade agreement negotiations are starting. We want to consolidate links with key economies in the north, and therefore the exposures that are on the way in trade negotiations that we are undertaking, the EPA, for example, the economic partnership agreements with the EU. There is a review of the EFTA agreement that we have with the European Free Trade Association countries. We're also looking at South-South opportunities, so we have started negotiations with India for the preferential trade agreement. We already have concluded a preferential trade agreement with the Mercosur countries in South America. And then we want to advance developmental agenda in the WTO multilateral negotiations. But I'll speak about the different agreements in more detail later. In terms of the key parameters for negotiations, as I've indicated, the negotiations is informed by and support the national development objectives that set out in the Industrial Policy Action Plan and the National Growth Plan and the National Development. In terms of the focus that we have in the negotiations is to provide opportunities to increase exports of value-added products. The negotiations, the outcome of the negotiations in these agreements should not unduly limit our development policy space. This is an issue that we picked up in our earlier negotiations, and we'll talk a bit about it later, that for example in the first negotiations that started after 1994 with the EU, the agreement that we concluded in the Trade Development and Cooperation Agreement really limited our policy space in some areas. And I think we learned a lot of lessons out of that. So now the focus of us also in negotiations is to make sure that we leave the necessary policy space for the economy to develop. The negotiations should also support regional integration. And in terms of the consultation process that we follow, we have a very intensive national consultation process that we have intergovernmental. For example, in terms of the agricultural negotiations, that's an important part of any of our negotiations. We have consultations with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and they're actually also part of the negotiation teams when we go through the different negotiations. Of course, the South African Revenue Services also play a key role, and they also are part of the negotiations in terms of customs, as I've indicated, the issues of the problems at borders is a big issue that we are trying to resolve, and it's key that the South African Revenue Services is also part of these negotiations. Of course, IPAC played a key role in the negotiations, especially in terms of the trade remedy chapters that we negotiate during these negotiations. And then we have a very intensive negotiation program also with Business and Labour in ECLAC. So we have monthly meetings in ECLAC and workshops in ECLAC, and where we discuss the negotiations. The negotiation positions that we're taking, especially in terms of the tariff concessions that we want to make, the rules of origins, so those very it's very key for actually using the tariff concessions that is made by the different countries in the negotiation, and also any other the policy issues that arise in these negotiations. We also consult with other government departments. Where necessary it depends on what we're negotiating. So for example, in services, we started negotiations in services, so in the different sectors, we have consultations with the different departments in those sectors to make sure that the negotiations and the position that we're taking in the negotiations will not undermine the policy direction that the different departments is taking and the opportunity for South Africa's economic development. And then of course, South Africa, as you well know, is also part of the Southern African Customs Union. We have a common external tariff, and therefore we are now negotiating the SACU and not a South Africa anymore. In the negotiations where it is specifically there's an effect on our common external tariff. So our services negotiations is a different issue. We negotiate with South Africa because in terms of services there is not an integration in SACU yet, and it doesn't affect our common external tariff. But for the other negotiations, we have negotiated SACU, we take positions at SACU, and we make tariff offers at SACU. So we will therefore First, agree in terms of nationally, we will agree to the tariff offer that we want to make in the different negotiations. Then we will go to SACU, and then there would be SACU consultations, and then a common agreed tariff offer that SACU will make as a group to whichever country we are negotiating with. In terms of the approach to regional integration, as I've indicated, we have a developmental integration policy that we're now following. We want to address by the integration in the region, in Tsavo, SADC, Tripartite, Continental. We want to address the shortcomings that there's currently in the system. We want to address the major barriers to inter-regional trade. As I've already indicated, one of the big issues in terms of the problems for inter-regional trade in Africa is inadequate infrastructure and the underdevelopment of production structures, the production capacity of the different countries. And therefore, that is what we want to focus on, and not only on the reduction of tariffs and regulatory barriers. That's also important, but it does not assist if you only address the one. If you only address tariffs and the regulatory barriers, it will not necessarily, the agreement will not necessarily lead to an increase of trade in the region. And this is something that we see in SADC, or a complaint that other countries have in terms of the SADC agreement. In terms of the SADC agreement, our trade has expanded tremendously with the other countries in the region, because we have a better infrastructure, we have a better development, better production capacity, but the other countries are not able to make use of the agreement in SADC to the same extent because of many of these issues, and therefore there is now more focus on this as well. In terms of we also look at finding complementarities in the different countries, and we try to develop that. In, for example, in software, as I indicated, we're already looking at a program to look at how we can develop regional value chains. If you look at an example, for example, we import raw skins and hides from Botswana that is used in the manufacturing of car seats that then go into the vehicles that we export. And in that way, we can also then develop regional value chains. And we're trying to also focus on that sort of practical processes to develop the region and to look at regional integration. In terms of our trade agreement, as I've indicated, we've already concluded the SALCO agreement. I'll talk about it a bit later. We have the SADC Free Trade Agreement, that's also an agreement that's concluded. We have the Tripartite Free Trade Agreement that we are still busy negotiating. We are busy negotiating a preferential trade agreement with India. We've concluded the Trade Development and Cooperation Agreement between South Africa and the European Union, and the trade chapter of that agreement is now being replaced by the Economic Partnership Agreement between SALCO and the EU that we have just concluded the negotiations of as part of the SADC EPA group that also includes Mozambique. We also have a free trade agreement that's been concluded between SALCO and the European Free Trade Association countries. And there's a financial trade agreement between SALCO and Mercosur that's also been concluded, and we just started with the Continental Free Trade Agreement negotiations. In terms of the SALCO agreement, the SALCO is the oldest customs union in the world. It was established in 1910. And after 1994, we renegotiated the old SALCO agreement, that resulted in the 2002 agreement. This agreement allows for the free movement of goods, and of course a big issue of the 2002 agreement was to democratize SALCO through the establishment of SALCO institutions based on consensus decision making. I'm sure we're all very aware of all of the issues relating to the institutions or the establishment of the institutions in SALCO. The aim was to move SALCO away from the arrangement held together by South Africa and the common external tariff into a developmental integration model. And therefore, the SACL work program has been reviewed and the agreement has been reached on a 5-point plan that looks at promoting regional industrial development as an overarching theme in the SACL work program. So, as I've indicated, we're focusing on identifying sectors with potential for development of regional value change, looking at complementarities in the different countries, improving trade facilitation, developing a common SACL institution. I won't go into all of the issues surrounding that because I'm sure ISAC will also talk about that when they are giving their presentation. And then promoting unified engagement in trade negotiations with third parties and reviewing the revenue sharing formula. The reviewing of the revenue sharing formula is still an ongoing process in terms of, importantly for us, for the trade negotiations. As I've indicated, we now engage as a group in terms of our negotiations with third parties. And before you can start negotiations with any party, the agreement needs also be given by the other countries involved. The static trade protocol. The static trade protocol is enforced since 25 January 2000. It also aims to reduce customs duties and other barriers to trade. For South Africa, this has been a very successful agreement. And our trade with our tariff partners has increased tremendously since this agreement came into play. 12 of the 15 member states in SADC have acceded to their trade protocol. Seychelles has just completed their accession process. Their tariff offer has been accepted, and I'm sure now at the SADC summit that's taking place, that process would be concluded, and Seychelles then would also form part of the trade protocol. Other two countries in SADC that haven't made offers yet, and they indicated that they plan to do it soon. How soon is we are not sure, but that is Angola and the DRC. And it's interesting to note that even in terms of these countries being, or the DRC and Angola, both of them is also part of COMESA, another regional integration area in Africa. They also haven't made offers in COMESA. And in the tripartite negotiations, they also part of the tripartite negotiations, and they also haven't made offers in that process. So they are still looking in terms of developing their own markets before they would be joining the trade protocol. In terms of South Africa's SACL's offer in terms of the SADC trade protocol, we grant duty-free status to 99% of products under the agreement. The product that is excluded are second-hand clothing, certain automotive parts, and sugar is liberalized, but it's subject to a volume-based quota. So there's a TRQ in place and a very specific agreement in terms of how the access for sugar works in SADC. The trade protocol, as I've indicated, has resulted in an increase in inter-regional trade from $6 billion to $24 billion US. The biggest beneficiary is South Africa in terms of this. Currently, over 90% of products are traded duty-free, and once it's implemented, over 99% of the product will be traded free of duty within SADC. SACL has fully implemented all our commitments in terms of our offer in terms of the trade protocol. Some of the other countries are still in the process of implementing, and some have even rolled back some of their commitments because of problems that they have in terms of their own economy. We have now also started, 2 years ago, as I indicated, we started negotiations in trading services. Services is a key sector for South Africa, and now actually is the bigger contributor to our GDP in terms of trade. We've identified six and agreed to six priority sectors in SADC where we're negotiating: tourism, finance, construction, transport, communication, and energy. And these negotiations is still ongoing, and the aim is to conclude it by next year. In terms of the tripartite free trade agreement negotiations, the tripartite free trade agreement, as I'm sure you also know, has been launched on 10 June 2015 in Egypt, following the launch of the negotiations in 2011. The tripartite negotiations is this three different parts of the negotiations. The one is a balance, the one pillar is market access. In terms of the market access, there is two phases. Phase one, that we just concluded, focus on trade and goods. And then phase two of the negotiations will focus on services, cooperation in intellectual property, competition, investment, and so forth. And then the other pillars focus on cross-border infrastructure development, as well as the development of regional industrial programs. The conclusion of negotiations on 10 June 2015 was really a conclusion of the legal text of the negotiations. And there is still a lot of work that we need to do to make this a functional free trade area, because there is quite a substantial built-in agenda that was also agreed at the launch on 10 June 2015. And this built-in agenda contains three areas of the first phase of negotiations that was not concluded. And that being the tariff negotiations, the negotiations of rules of origin, and then also negotiations on an annex on trade remedies. This process is now going forth. We actually have negotiating meetings coming up, and technical working group meetings coming up, and on all three of these areas. And the aim is to finalise the negotiations on the first phase in the next 6 to 12 months. As you know, for a functional free trade area, it's key to have tariff negotiations concluded under rules of origin, because that is really what then leads to actual trade in a free trade area. For South Africa, we have already exchanged tariff offers with the EAC, that the Eastern African Community, that Kenya, Burundi, Uganda, Tanzania is part of. The one issue in terms of this is that what is agreed in the negotiations is that members of the those members or those countries in the negotiations with new countries already have a trade agreement in place will not negotiate with those members again. So in terms of study, we will not negotiate with all of the countries that is in SADC with whom we already have a trade agreement in place. In CUMESA, the CUMESA countries will not negotiate with other countries in CUMESA with whom they have a trade agreement, and the same with the EAC. So the effect of this is that South Africa or SAGU is really negotiating then with the EAC, except for the EAC, one of the members of the EAC, that is also a customs union, the Eastern African Customs Union, but one of its members, Tanzania, is a member of SADC, but not a member of COMESA. The other four countries are members of COMESA. So in terms of our offer to the EAC, the offer is really for the other four countries in the EAC, excluding Tanzania, because with Tanzania we already have a trade agreement in terms of SADC. And then the other country, a main country that we've been negotiating with is Egypt, of course, that's a member of UNESA. And we've just finalized the SAGU offer to Egypt, and we will have an exchange, a simultaneous exchange with Egypt in terms of our tariff offer during the end of August, and we hope to finalize the negotiations by the end of the year. And then we also would have to make offers to other countries that is not in SADC, like Ethiopia, Djibouti, Eritrea, and Sudan, but this is a process that is still ongoing. In terms of the advantages of the tripartite free trade agreement, it combines a market of 26 countries with a population of nearly 625 million people, and it has a combined GDP of $1.6 trillion. So this provides a market scale that should launch a sizable part of the continent onto a new development trajectory. And of course, the tripartite and free trade agreement will form the basis of the African-wide free trade agreement, of which the negotiations also just started. In terms of the second phase of the negotiations, that will also now start. And in January 2016, that is negotiations, as I indicated, in trade and services, corporations on IPR, engagement, competition policy, and so forth. And the work on the other two pillars is also ongoing. And we also have a separate act in the market integration pillar that looks at the movement of business persons. In terms of the continental free trade negotiations, as I've indicated, at the AU Summit on 15 June 2015, the negotiations for the Continental Free Trade Agreement has been launched. There was also agreement that there would be two phases in the negotiations. In the first phase of the negotiations, it's going to include goods and services, that's a bit different from the tripartite negotiations. And the indicative date for completion of phase one of the negotiations is the end of 2017. This is a very ambitious timeline and will need a lot of resources from the different countries if we are going to meet the deadline of 2017 to finalize the negotiations of the first phase for the Continental Free Trade Agreement. The benefits of the Continental FTA is that it's a much bigger market. It's over 1 billion people, and it's got with a combined GDP of over 2 million trillion US dollars. And again, we are following the same developmental integration model as with the tripartite agreement, where there would also be the different pillars to the negotiations, and there will also be a focus on cooperation on industrial and infrastructure development and not only on market integration. In terms of the SACU-India negotiations, we are negotiating a preferential trade agreement with India at SACU. A preferential trade agreement is a much more focused agreement in terms of tariff preferences than a free trade agreement. This agreement will provide a legal institutional framework for to manage trade between India and SACU. As you can see, India is now South Africa's sixth largest trade partner, and trade in 2014 has grown to almost 50 billion rand. We're having great difficulties in terms of finalizing the South African SACU offer to India, because a lot of concerns are being raised by both labour and business in terms of the high-tariff barriers in the Indian market. It's very difficult to penetrate the Indian market. There are different processes in place in terms of the different regions within India. So it's also not easy for some products to move across India because of the different provinces that have their own regulations in terms of some products. And the other problem is that India's request lists are also very sensitive in some very sensitive sectors, like clothing and textiles and chemicals, plastics and the fourth, and some agricultural products. So we're having difficulties in agreeing to an offer in terms that we can make to India, and this has been holding up negotiations now for almost 2 years. We've now agreed to look at the early conclusion of the negotiations with India, but on a reduced level of ambition. So we would look only to cover about 4% of SACU tariff book in terms of preferences exchange. Well, as I've indicated, in terms of the peak trade negotiations, we cover at least 85% normally of the SACU tariff book. We want to use in this limited PQA as an incremental building block in terms of trade in future and build on this agreement going forward. In terms of the economic partnership agreement, the EU remains South Africa's largest trading partner, although trade has declined in recent years since 2008. The trade development and cooperation agreement has been in place between South Africa and the European Union since 2000, and it's been fully implemented since 2012. And you can see the total trade between South Africa and the EU has increased from 137 billion rand in 2000 to 497 billion rand in 2014. And if you look in terms of what we are trading, about 95% of what we are trading is duty-free between the two countries. South Africa, although we have the already trade agreement in place between South Africa and the EU, South Africa decided in around 2004 to join the Economic Partnership Agreement negotiations that was ongoing between the EU and the African Pacific and Caribbean countries. South Africa joined this process as part of the SADC EPA group that consists, of course, of our other member states in SACU, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland, as well as Mozambique and Angola. And the reason for us joining is that we wanted to consolidate the trade relationship between SACU and the EU in terms of one agreement. And we wanted to just some further market access in terms of agriculture. At the end of 2007, many of the countries, the ACP countries, including a number of the countries in the SADC EPA group, signed interim economic partnerships agreement with the EU to keep their duty-free access into the EU market in place. South Africa didn't sign this agreement. And a lot of the work since 2008 was to address our concerns in terms of the provisions in the interim EPA, and also to increase, as I've indicated, South Africa's access in terms of agricultural products to the EU market. Fish as well was not covered at all in the PCA agreement, and that was also another focus that we wanted to increase our trade in terms of fish and the preferential access into the EU market in terms of fish products. We've concluded the negotiations in terms of the economic partnership agreement with the EU in June 2014, and the agreement was initialed by all of the countries except Angola, that didn't make a trade offer again in terms of this negotiation, and will be in a position to join later the agreement if they so wish. One of the big issues in terms of the agricultural negotiations or the more market access in terms of agriculture is the demand that the EU was placing on South Africa, especially in terms of more market access for EU products into the South African SACU market. And to sort of combat this demand from the EU while still getting something in terms of additional market access for South African products into the EU, South Africa in September 2011 made a major concession to negotiate the practical indications in exchange for improved agricultural access. We concluded this geographical indications protocol with the EU as well, and in terms of this protocol, we will be protecting a number of agricultural products, the names of agricultural products from the EU, some cheeses and olive oils and so forth, and then of course also some EU wines, and in exchange, the EU will also be protecting South African wine names, as well as three agricultural products, namely rooibos, honeyboos, and kurlam. As I've indicated, we've reached an agreement with the EU in June 2014. This agreement contains additional markets, some key additional market access in terms of agriculture and fishery products for South Africa, especially in terms of sugar. We have not had any access into the EU market in terms of sugar. We now will have, in terms of this agreement, preferential access, as well as increased access, preferential access for wines, and then for some other key agricultural products, including fishery products. We also managed to negotiate, as I've indicated earlier, we had some problems in terms of the TDCA, in terms of the policy space that we gave up under the TDCA, especially in terms of export taxes. In terms of the TDCA, we are not allowed to impose any export taxes on any product destined for the EU. In terms of the EPA agreement, we managed to renegotiate the agreement on export taxes, and now we are able to, for a limited number of products, impose export taxes also on products being exported to the EU. We have agreed on an extended accumulation provision that is very important for us in terms of integration in Africa. In terms of this accumulation provision, we would be able to accumulate with products from other African countries in products that we are exporting to the EU. So we will be able to import, for example, apples from Mauritius and then make apple juice and export that apple juice to the EU, and it will be seen as South African product in terms of the extended accumulation provisions. We've also agreed on an automatic agricultural safeguard clause on some agricultural, specific agricultural products, and we've agreed on a bilateral safeguard provision that would be in place for the duration of this agreement. In terms of TDCA, we had a bilateral safeguard provision that fell away in 2012. So at the moment we have no safeguards that we can use in terms of increase of imports coming from the EU under the TDCA agreement. This agreement, the EPA agreement, is currently subject to a joint legal scrubbing exercise, after which it will be signed by all of the parties. And then in terms of the implementation, the EU can provisionally apply the agreement. South Africa and the other countries in SACU is not in a position to provisionally apply the agreement, so we would have to go through a ratification process to be able to implement the agreement and for the agreement to enter into force. One of the big issues in terms of this is that the preferential access that Botswana, Namibia and Swaziland has currently into the EU, they currently, in terms of the IEPA agreement, have duty-free, quota-free access into the EU, but this access will fall away on 30 September 2016 if the EPA agreement is not ratified by that date. So we have a short time frame in terms of which to finalize the final outstanding issue, the legal scrubbing of the agreement, to sign the agreement and need to go through ratification processes for this agreement to enter into force. In terms of the European Free Trade Association Agreement, EFTA agreement, EFTA comprises of Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway and Switzerland. SACU signed the agreement with the EFTA countries in 2006, and this agreement entered into force on the 1st of May 2008. The rationale in concluding the agreement with EFTA was to build on the existing South Africa EU Trade and Development and Cooperation Agreement, and to harmonize the trade relations with most of the European countries. The EFTA agreement covers trade in goods, and it comprises of trade in industrial products, including the process of cultural products, fish and other marine products. It deals with rules of origin, customs duties on imports, and it's got a mutual administrative assistance chapter as well that assists with the customs issues that arise. This agreement covers all of the products falling in chapters 25 to 97 of the SACU tariff book, including hides and skins in chapter 41 and cotton in chapter 52. The reason why I mentioned this is that the EFTA countries do not have a common policy in terms of a basic agriculture product. So the products in chapters 1 to 24 of the direct book, and therefore SACU has to conclude bilateral agreements with the different EFTA countries in terms of trade on basic agriculture products. That was also done and concluded in, and implemented with the rest of the agreement in 2008. And we are currently in a process of reviewing the agreement in terms of the agreement after a certain period of time. There's an automatic review process, and that process has now started. We've agreed that we will postpone it until the finalization of the EFTA negotiations so that we can again harmonize between what we have with the European Union countries and then the countries in EFTA. We are currently consulting with the domestic industry to comply the requests on basic and basic agriculture products to be submitted to EFTA in terms of the review. We have a preferential trade agreement also in place between SACU and Mercosur. Mercosur comprises of Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay and Uruguay. The PTA aims at promoting trade between the two sides on a selected number of products. The agreement covers about 1,000 tariff lines in the Mercosur and SACU tariff book, and it also provides the legal basis for trade between the two blocks. The preferences that's given in terms of this agreement between the two blocks is between 10 and 100%. At the moment, the agreement is not in full yet, although it's been concluded in 2008. The reason for this is that all of the SACU countries have already ratified the agreement, but it's still waiting ratifications by some of the countries within Mercosur. Once all of the countries have ratified the agreement, it will enter into force. And say that is shortly from me if there's any question.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Can we end it to passing this question in regards to
thank you very much for an incredible amount of information. It's been a really short presentation, so yeah, I was very, very interesting. Just two questions. One is actually about your slide about the European Union. You mentioned as your first bullet point, EU remains the state's largest trading partner, although trade declined in recent years. And then your third bullet point says total trade between SA and EU increased from 137 billion in 2000 to 497 billion in 2014. I mean, that really doesn't seem like an increase at all. It seems quite sundry. And then the second one relates to the first one of your presentation, where you had the comment about one of the most challenging things that you need to do is the negotiation on borders and on, obviously, movements of goods across borders. And also, it's interesting that you made the comment that with Angola and DRC were the two countries that hadn't made, obviously, come to remain outside the free trade agreement. Because in a book written by Dr. Greg Mills, about how to fix African economies, he talks specifically about the problem of getting goods across borders, and he refers specifically to the example of between Zambia and the DRC. And he said it takes on average for a truck to get, it takes 3 days for a truck to get across the border. And obviously that devastating effects for perishable goods. And particularly if we were, I think, France or Southern Africa, or Africa, or goods to the north, that should surely be a major problem. So my question to you is, how much political will is it if these things sorted out? And, I mean, how much success are we having? Because until we can have trucks moving through borders in less than 24 hours, you know, it's going to have a major effect on our trade with other countries.
I want to respond. I will take all the questions.
Maybe in terms of the first questions on the EU, it is true that our trade with the EU has increased tremendously since 2000 when the agreement was concluded. But the EU used to be our, it still isn't a bloc, our biggest trading partner, but since 2008, the trade has actually slowed down, and now China is our biggest, as an individual country, China is our biggest trading partner, and even our trade with other African countries is increasing. So although the trade increased from 2000 to now, the debt has increased, it has slowed down. The increase in the trade has slowed down since the economic crisis in 2008, and we're actually not quite hit back at the figures before 2008. So I think that's the big issue.
So you're asking the complete increase or is it trade?
It's increased from 2000, but from 2008 it declined quite significantly, and then it started to increase again. So it is increasing, but it's still not at what we were before 2008. Of course, the issue there is also the EU and the problems in the EU market itself, and that is also in terms of the own economic problems that they're having. And as you can see, with many of the issues that we are facing in the EU market now, they're putting up more and more non-tariff barriers to also stop imports from coming in to protect their own industries. And that's why that's also a big issue that we are trying to address in terms of the various negotiations. In terms of the border issues, it is a major problem in especially Africa. And that is why, as you know, the trade facilitation agreement was concluded in the World Trade Organization in Bali in 2013. And the aim is for this agreement to come into force by the time of the next Ministerial Council meeting of the WTO that is taking place in Nairobi in December 2015. So the trade facilitation agreement is aimed at addressing many of these issues at the borders, but there is many problems in terms of the trade facilitation agreement in the sense of the capacity of developing and least developed countries, especially in Africa, to be able to implement the commitment in terms of that agreement. Because a lot of the problem is surrounding infrastructure and infrastructure development. That's why we also aim at something in terms of our negotiations on the African continent, that we're not only looking at tariff negotiations or market integration, but we are also looking at infrastructure development to try and address some of these issues in terms of at borders, the problems with roads and so forth. A major issue for it. The major issue with this is political will. So if there's not political will from these countries, it's impossible to make movement. And that's why also even in the Trade Partners Negotiations, it's one of the issues in South Africa that we highlighted in the meeting of the summit in Egypt in June, is that we moved very fast in terms of the market integration, but other two pillars that deals with infrastructure development, industrial development seems to be lacking. We need to put more emphasis and more political will in terms of those processes as well to move it forward.
On our opinion and follow up, Dr. Carlos and Lanta.
Establishing the inputs. You raised an issue around the issue of reduction in tariffs, or reduction in the elimination of tariffs. Do you think that in your own thinking, you would have done doing the issue of investment if we eliminate the tariffs? Or is it going to really open up? Instead of protecting our own market, not really being open enough for them. I had a question relating to your slide on page 15 on the tripartite of FTA negotiations. I wanted to know how many of the 26 countries signed the agreement text of the launch in June this year, and was South Africa one of them? If not, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And then I also wanted to ask you, secondly, which products will South Africa want to be sensitive in the negotiations for the rules of origin? Thanks.
I know it sounds more like acceptable the fact that we will be changing to T3. with the third countries. I know from labor perspective that everybody would agree. But my concern is that what impact is it going to have in for future? Are we not searching to face, or are we not opening from the very concept, opening too much? Or are we not setting for a failure for future trading with the SADC countries? I think the issue about whether the reduction of tariffs will that lead to investment, or will that lead to people not investing because we're not protecting our own market, that's a really key question, and that's what makes the negotiations and especially the consultations with key industries so important, and with the affected government departments. Because you have to open up and in certain sectors, and opening up in certain sectors will lead to investment, but you have to be careful in opening up that you don't open up too much, or you don't open up in those sectors, they still want to be able to provide some protection in terms of the development of the industry. And that is where the Balancing Act comes in, and the input that we receive in our consultations from all parties is I think the key. It is to have to balance it, because it can lead to investment, because if you open up and you reduce tariffs on certain input products, it can make a certain industry more competitive, and it can lead to investment. But then you also have to see in terms of the final product, you must have the scoping to protect it, otherwise investment is not going to come. So that's the issue. It's balancing the different interests and making sure, that's why it's key, as I've indicated, that we don't unduly limit our policy space. And if that's also and I think it also is to the question in terms of SADC. I mean, and in the tripartite, I mean, in fact, we've opened up, we've implemented, we are exporting a lot. We're not yet really getting a lot of exports coming in terms of the SADC agreement from other countries. But that may change in the future as those countries also develop and their capacity, production capacity also develops in the industrial base. And therefore, what's very important in all of this agreement is the role of ISAC in terms of the provisions that you then put in place to be able then to address competition that is then currently coming in terms of the tariff reductions that you've agreed to, that now is causing some concern for your domestic industry. So it's very important that you have safeguard provisions in place in those agreements, that if the agreement works, as it should, because I mean, that is what a free trade agreement is supposed to do, it is supposed to increase trade. But if it happens and then causes problems for your domestic industry, how are you going to address that? And therefore you need to have some of these trade instruments that ISAC also deals with. In terms of the tripartite free trade agreement, the signature, 16 of the 26 countries signed the agreement. South Africa did not sign the agreement. We did not sign the agreement because we're not in agreement with it. But the problem is that the legal scrubbing of the agreement has not yet been finalized, and it's still not finalized. And therefore, in terms of our own internal processes, we're not in a position to sign the agreement. We must go through legal scrubbing, that it is currently going through a legal scrubbing process, and then we will go through the domestic processes that we require to get the necessary approval to sign the agreement. What we did do is that we signed the declaration at the tripartite declaration on the launch of the base rate agreement, as well as the launch of the second phase of the negotiations. So we will sign in future. It's an administrative issue. In terms of the rules of origin, this is
the negotiations, as that indicates, is ongoing in the tripartite. We've agreed in the tripartite negotiations that we will look at the rules. So we will not have a general rule that is applicable. Many countries that indicate that they are in favor of having general rules. So if you have 25% value add, your product should be able to qualify to be exported under preferences. We have not agreed to that approach. We said we should look at specific products, the needs of that specific product in terms of what the rule of origin should be. So for example, basic agricultural products, born and bred, should be born and bred in your country, otherwise you're not able to trade under preference. For us, one of the key areas in terms of the rules of origin, in terms of the sensitive products, is sewing and textiles. In terms of the SADC agreement, in terms of the rules of origin and trade on textiles and clothing, or many of the products under textile and clothing, you need two-stage transformation. So you can't import the textile and manufacture clothing and export it under the preference. And that is also provides protection not only for the clothing industry but also for the textiles industry. In terms of COMESA, the rules of origin for clothing, trade in clothing and textiles in COMESA and in the EAC, it's single state transformation. So these are the sort of issues that we are now negotiating, and that's why a lot of our products we are still seeing as sensitive in terms of our tariff negotiations until we know what the rule of origin is and if it will create the necessary incentive also for the production in South Africa to increase and also protection, of course, for local production. Like, I don't know if that answers all of the questions.
Okay, just one simple question. I noticed the absence of China in any trade negotiations. Are we in any form of trade negotiations? They're not talking about.
But not to South Africa.
without those negotiated 9-4-4-9. And that is where there is some difficulties, I suppose, from coming in terms of competing interests, because now for us to get additional access into the EU, we have to offer something at all. And that is where the problems come in terms of what we can offer at all, because the other countries doesn't need to offer anything because they already have duty-free quota be access, and they may in certain products may not want to offer anything because it's also sensitive products for them. And that's why in the end we had to move, not because only SACU interest, but also our own domestic limitations in terms of making more offers in terms of agriculture. We had to move for us to receive a more advantageous offer from EU in terms of agricultural market access. We had to move to negotiate GIs, geographical indications, that is a national competency and not a SACU competency. So that is, instead of giving more market access, we did give a bit more market access, very limited, more market access in terms of agriculture, but we negotiated the protection for the geographical indication. So that is why we prefer that in terms of SACU negotiations, we not only make an offer as a block, but we also receive it as a block. Otherwise, we get this competing interest that we're talking about. And then in terms of the time frame for 2000, this is indicative date was set by the age of date. We've indicated that we think 2017 is not a realistic time frame. If you just look at the current tripartite negotiations, we are 26 countries in Africa negotiating the tripartite free trade agreement. We started in 2011. It took us 18 months just to finalize the initial preliminary phase before the actual negotiation started. We had a time frame of 3 years. We did not need that time frame. We've now concluded the agreement, but not really, because there's quite a significant built-in program agenda that deals with the real issues, namely tariff negotiations and rules of origin. That will take probably another year. So all of the tripartite countries is going to be very involved still in this process for the next year in terms of the rules of origin negotiations in the tripartite and the tariff negotiations. And now we are starting negotiations with 54 African countries. That includes the other 26 in the tripartite. And we're not only in the first phase negotiating tariffs on goods, but we're also negotiating services. That is where the biggest issue comes in, because if you look at all of the regional integration in Africa, it's integrated in goods, it's not integrated in services, or very limited integration in terms of services. It's being negotiated in all of the regions. So even in SACU, that's the oldest customs union in the world, we haven't negotiated services. We just started in SACU. So that's the big issue in terms of, we're saying it's very ambitious, the 2017 timeline, because it will deal, you have to finalize both services and goods negotiations, and during the most part, the big part of this period, we still have to be negotiating the tripartite. So I think that issue, we face it, but you know, as I said, the age of states had a different decision, I think.
How are you? Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
and honorable members. My name is Nomda Somdaka, and I will be making a presentation on tariff investigation. In terms of the outline of my presentation, I will briefly go through the mandate of ITEC, the vision, mission, and core functions, and then I will focus more on the tariff investigations part of the presentation. So I will cover the tariff investigations unit, the policy and the legal framework that informs the tariff investigation, the types of tariff amendments, the contribution to the new growth price drivers, the assessment criteria that we look at when we are conducting investigations, the application process, and then I will present briefly on some of the examples of tariff amendments. The mandate of ITEC, as outlined in the ITA Act, is to foster economic growth and development in order to promote investment and employment through the administration of international trade instruments. The international trade instruments being ITEC's three core functions: the tariff investigations that I'm going to make a presentation on, the trade remedies, my colleague Karina will make a presentation on that, as well as the import and export control, and my colleague Maria will make a presentation on that. With regard to tariff investigation units, the relevant unit is structured according to various sectors. We have tariff investigations one that is managed by my colleague Ms. Regatia, who is not here, and this unit focuses on sectors like agriculture, agro-processing, chemicals, clothing, and textiles. And then we have the tariff investigations two unit that is managed by myself, and it focuses on the automotive sector, metals, electrical equipment. This unit is also responsible for the administration of the automotive production and development program on behalf of trade and industry. In terms of the policy and the legal framework that informs our work, we have the new growth path, industrial policy framework, the trade policy framework. These policies advocate a developmental approach to tariff reform. That is an approach that is sensitive to employment outcomes of our investigation. And then with regards to the legal framework, we have the ITA Act, which provides the legal basis for ITEC to conduct tariff investigation. And we have the regulations, which provides clarity on the procedure with regards to how the investigations are conducted. And we have to comply to various bilateral agreements, which Nikki has already covered, the regional agreements, as well as the international agreements, basically the World Trade Organization agreements. With regards to the trade investigations, we had an agreement on the boundaries, the ceilings beyond which we can raise the customs duties. And we also have other domestic laws like the Promotion of Administration Justice Act, which ensures fairness and transparency with regards to our processes and recommendations pertaining to tariff information. Now coming to tariff amendments, the main objective of tariff amendments is to promote domestic manufacturing, employment retention and creation, as well as international competitiveness. We have three types of customs tariff amendments, customs tariff being a tax on imported products in order to protect the local manufacturers. So in the case of the increase in customs duties, we consider this instrument in order to support the domestic manufacturers that are experiencing threatening import competition. this is particularly with regards to those industries that are critical in terms of employment and value addition. The second instrument is the reduction in customs duty. It is considered whether a good is not manufactured locally or unlikely to be manufactured locally. When we say it is unlikely to be manufactured locally, it means that we also look at the potential as whether a particular product can be manufactured in the future before we actually reduce the customs duty. The policy with regards to the reduction in customs duty is that tariffs on mature resource-based capital-intensive upstream industries are selectively reviewed in order to support the downstream labor-intensive industries. And the last instrument is the rebate provision, which is a waiver of customs duty and therefore an availability at well-competitive prices of inputs that are used to manufacture products for both the domestic and export markets. We've got various industrial rebates, and we also have the other export rebates, which we call the 47003. It is used by the local manufacturers to import certain inputs that are used for processing for certain products that are exclusively exported. What is critical with regards to providing a tariff support is the principle of reciprocity. And it is emphasized in the relevant policies, and it's linked to the developmental approach into tariff setting. And it's got two elements, one being the commitment to creating employment, as well as the developmental or structuring plans in order to improve competitiveness. ITEC has been positioned to contribute to the relevant job drivers as outlined in the new growth path framework. In terms of the infrastructure development, ITEC may provide tariff support to new energy industries that would supply the relevant components. It can also be positioned to give support to the existing industries. In terms of green economy, ITEC embarked on the analysis of the tariff regime for green goods with a view of identifying opportunities for manufacturing as well as sales. During that analysis, it became clear that the accurate data is very critical for trade monitoring and tariff support. As a result, we worked closely with SARS, and the dedicated tariff lines have been created for a number of selected green goods, which included the generators for wind turbines. So what we are going to do in the future is to continue monitoring trade flows, and we are also working closely with IDC in terms of developing this industry. So where it is relevant, ITEC will provide tariff support based on the trade monitoring exercise. With regard to agriculture value chain, what we take into consideration is the global distortion, and food security is also very critical. And tariff support is positioned in order to contribute to rural development through improving geographical spread of economic activities to rural areas. In terms of the mining value chain, tariff support has been positioned in order to support the downstream industries. And export control measures have also been put in place in order to support domestic mineral beneficiation. My colleague Marius is going to touch on the relevant export control. And then we've got the manufacturing sectors. As I have indicated earlier on, tariffs on mature capital intensive upstream industries will be reviewed with the interest of supporting the labor intensive industries. and then tariffs on downstream industries that are strategic in terms of employment and investment may also be retained and in some cases increased. With regard to the assessment criteria, it is very comprehensive and it is carried out on a case-by-case basis, taking into consideration the implications for the whole value chain. We have developed questionnaires in order to collect the relevant information from the industries applying for tariff support, and it reflects the factors that are going to present on now. We apply it consistently across all sectors. We've got various sectors. The first one is that the list that is indicated here is not exhaustive. We've just selected a few for the purposes of this presentation. We have the domestic production capacity and potential. So before we reduce the issues, we will look at the potential to manufacture a particular product, even if it's not already being manufactured locally. And we can also provide tariff support for a newly established instant industry that is promising in terms of creating employment as well as investment. And we would analyze the market share in relation to the trade data to check if the imports of a particular product actually displace that product in the local market. Because we've got some cases whereby you find that in a particular industry you've got like 4 pence, and you find that a particular company is losing the market share to other local manufacturers and not necessarily to imports. So in those cases, we might not provide tariff support because the industry would be suffering not because of the imported products. And then we would look at the demand condition. The critical one is the price and the demand condition is the price and the cost structure. We will analyze the cost structures to check if the industries that apply for tariff support are actually competitive, looking at the cost like the raw material, labor cost, electricity, as well as profitability of the relevant products. And then with regards to supply conditions, we do look at the sectors like skills that are required, the investment that is required, as well as infrastructure. And we would also look at the price differentials, that is the difference between the prices of locally manufactured products versus the prices of the imported products, in order to determine whether a local manufacturers have a price advantage or not. And then if they are experiencing price disadvantages, that's when we can raise the tariffs in line with the price disadvantage in order to make it competitive in the medium to low term. Now, in terms of the application process, after we have received an application, we would conduct a preliminary investigation. And during that phase, we would do interviews with the relevant interested parties, who would send questionnaires and collect as much information as we can. But what is very critical during that stage as well is the verification of the financial and the product information that is submitted by the applicant, because we want to make sure that when we make recommendations to the commission, the decision can be accurate as possible. After submitting the findings to the commission will either publish an investigation based on whether there is a prima facie case in order to initiate an investigation, or the commission can either decline it. But in a situation whereby the commission finds a prima facie case, an application will be initiated in the government gazette. for a period of 2 to 4 weeks or even more depending on the issues at hand. And during the publication period, we would consult more with other interested parties that we didn't know during the preliminary phase. And it is also during this period that we would consult with the other sub-countries as we share the common external territory, so that we can find their views in terms of whether they are supporting, for example, an increase in customs duty or a reduction in customs duty. And then we would compile a final determination submission that we would present to the Commission. The Commission would make a recommendation to the Minister whether to increase a particular duty, for instance, or not recommend it. And if the Minister of Trade and Industry is happy, he would instruct the Minister of Finance to implement the recommendation for a tariff amendment. And then SARS would publish the implementation notice in the government gazette. The turnaround times, in terms of turnaround times, we aspire to finalize our investigations within 6 months, but it depends on the size of the industry. We find that there are a lot of firms that will be participating during a particular investigation and other interested parties. But for the industries that have been declared as distressed industries, we have to finalize the investigation within 6 months. After a duty or any tariff amendment has been put in place, with a unit that focuses on monitoring and evaluation, that unit would do impact assessments on the duties that have been recommended in order to check if they are actually working. And we would also review the duties within a period of 1 to 5 years, but we usually review the duties after 3 years. It depends on how sensitive the industry is. Sometimes it can be 1 or 2 years. And now coming to the examples of the tariff amendments that we have recommended in the last 4 financial years, we had an application from Notex Henning, which is based in Limpopo. The applicant applied for an increase in customs duty from 15% to 37%. The Commission supported the additional tariff support, and it was on tomato puree, paste and concentrate. And because of that amendment, we've had a recent entrant in the tomato canning industry, which is a cake concentrate, and it is based in Kuha. I'm not going to present on all the examples for tariff support. I've just selected a few. We've got the laminated automotive windscreens. The applicant was Shatterproof USD Auto Glass, and these companies are based in Gauteng and Eastern Cape. They applied for additional tariff support from 15% to 30%. The Commission in this case considered that the automotive glass industry had invested a considerable amount of capital in order to establish a world-class production facility to supply the original equipment manufacturers who manufacture motor vehicles. Therefore, the Commission supported this application. And then we have GRAVE SA, which is a non-profit organization that represents around 3,400 commercial grain producers, as well as 2,600 emerging grain producers, and they are mainly based in the Free State and the Western Cape. The Commission approved the increase in the dollar-based reference price on wheat from $215 to $294. The Commission considered this application with due regard to food security whilst placing the wheat producers on the same competitive footing as their counterparts internationally. We had duties on set-top boxes in order to support the digital migration. We had duties on heat exchange units. Most importantly, we had duties on that we approved on the various poultry products, and the applicant was South African Poultry Association. Most of the companies which manufacture the poultry products are based in Northwest Province, Western Cape, Mpumalanga, and KZN. Additional duties were imposed on all dead, homeless cars offered amongst the other products. And then with regards to the reduction in customs duty, this is in cases whereby we found that the local manufacturers of the relevant industries. So the duties that were in place were regarded as unnecessary cost raising effect on the consumers in the absence of those particular industries. So we eliminated duties on polyethylene bags, hydraulic brake fluid, engine CV joints, stranded wire, graphite electrodes, and lithium batteries amongst the other products. In terms of the rebate provision, we had an applicant from Western Cape, which is called PTY-FPT. It applied for a rebate provision on petroleum bitumen. The commission supported this application, and this is a critical input in infrastructure projects, and it and the bitumen is primarily used for surfacing of roads. Establishing of roads and for routine material. Okay, at this point, I will hand over to Karen. Okay.
And honourable members. Like the Maria said, that Emily's is one of the three core business units of ITAC. So my presentation will focus on the trade remedies unit. We have two sub-units in trade remedies, one headed myself and another by my colleague Soleko. We advocate work based on availability of investigators. We have in total 18 investigators and 2 administrators, and we normally allocate investigations to teams of 2 investigators, 1 project manager and 1 senior investigator, and then the administrators assist in doing the public files. We operate a public file system in our investigations in order to give interested parties access to information. The instruments that our units deal with are anti-dumping measures, countering measures, and safeguard measures. And the objectives of these measures are to enable fair trade in order to sustain domestic production, to retain fair jobs, and to promote international competitiveness. And we conduct these investigations like tariff investigations on behalf of SOAP as a whole, in terms of a ministerial instruction, as well as ministers instruction, until the institutions of SOAP have been established. And in terms of the negotiations, we, in most in agreements that we negotiate, SOAP would retain its right to use these instruments as prescribed by the WTO. With an addition that we would normally also negotiate a bilateral safeguard revision. So all of our agreements would at least have 1 bilateral safeguard provision, sometimes more than one. In later agreements, we have negotiated a special agricultural safeguard provision, like the APAS, for example. So we would be involved in participating in both the negotiations, but but more importantly, I think, implementing this agreement of the condition. In terms of the distribution of our time in terms of the investigation, we've seen that since 2003, when ITAC was initiated, the majority of our investigations are for anti-dumping. And if you look at the trends internationally, you would find exactly the same trend. Probably in the WTO terms, at least 90% of investigations done of the free trade remedy are anti-dumping. As you are aware, we are a member of the WTO, so we are bound by the rules of the WTO. And the three agreements that are applicable to the work that we do is the anti-dumping agreement, the subsidies and countervailing agreement, and the safeguards agreement. And we have also translated these into domestic legislation. The IFA Act is the main enabling legislation for us to do this investigation, but we have also, in terms of the Act, issued three sets of regulations for each of the three instruments. And these provide the procedures for both the Commission and interested parties to do these investigations and to make it clear for interested parties what is required in using these instruments. Then the other two pieces of legislation that is important to us is the Administrative Justice Act and the Access to Information Act. It has quite an effect on our time frame, these two pieces of legislation. We have to provide sufficient opportunity for interested parties to have access to information and also for them to defend their interests, both in written form and also orally before the Commission. As I said, in terms of the historic use of the instrument, the majority of the investigations are anti-dumping. In the years 95 to 2011, 95 really joined the WTO. We initiated only 13 countervailing investigations or anti-subsidy investigations in comparison to the 216 anti-dumping investigations. And in the later years, 2007 to 2011, the Commission only initiated 2 countervailing investigations. Since 2012, there's been some more interest shown in the countervailing instrument, and 4 new applications were received from industry. We conducted 1 safeguard investigation from 2003 and 2011 on glycine, and we have since also now conducted 1 on frozen potato chips. So 2 safeguard investigations in the years 2003 to 2014. We have received 3 other applications for a safeguard, rabbi illustrates and olive oil, but they were all declined because of the quality of the information. We've also seen an increasing trend in the number of anti-dumping investigations. I think also not only South African trade, but worldwide since 2008, the financial situation, economic situation. We have 7 new trade remedy investigations initiated in the year 2012-13. And in the last financial year, another 4. As I said, that anti-dumping is the most used instrument. So in short, dumping is selling goods at a lower price in the export market than in the domestic market. I think it's a normal business practice for firms to engage into geographical price discrimination to make as much profit as possible. The WTO, however, says that when dumping causes injury, it becomes an unfair trade practice. And the WTO agreement then gives rules on how to deal with this dumping problem. We've been an active user of the instrument for a long time. We enacted our first legislation on dumping in 1940. In doing an investigation and in order to impose measures, there are these 3 links in anti-dumping investigation that you have to prove. You have to prove dumping, you have to prove that the sulfur industry is suffering injury, and there's a link between the injury and the dumping that is taking place. So what is the finding on all three for in order for you to do this investigation? In terms of dumping, the information for immigration is provided by the domestic industry, it's prima facie information. But for making findings on duty, normally it would be exporters in the foreign market that provide this information. And basically it will be, the calculation will be the normal value or the basic selling price, say in China, that we have adjusted to the factory level for transport cost, packaging cost, volume rebates, things like that. And from that it adjusts the average export price, also after adjustments up to the factory level. And the dumping margin is then spread in terms of a percentage of FOB export price, and that is then the duty that is imposed. So when goods are being exported from that market, they will pay an additional duty coming into our market. In terms of the material injury, it's information that is provided by the salty industry, normally South African industry, but as we are doing these investigations for the whole of salty, we might also be producers in BLNS that will participate. We get the information for a period of 3 years. We do a trend analysis, then first year and last year. And there are 14 injury factors that have to be considered, prescribed by the WTO agreement and also our domestic regulations. And normally there would be either price injury or volume injury. Normally it would be manufacturers keep on producing in order to keep the volume, keep the cost down, and because they have to reduce prices. Sometimes they can reduce the production, and they would rather keep the price up. So the Commission does an overall assessment of these 14 factors, just to give you an idea of what factors we are considering. Sales, profits, output, market share, production, return on investment, utilization of capacity, other factors, any other factor that affects domestic prices, the magnitude of dumping, inventories, employment, wages, growth, and the ability to raise capital. So we will have information for 3 years on all 14 of these factors. The Commission have an overall assessment to see whether the overall assessment shows that there is information justifying a finding of material injury. And so you do not have to make a positive finding on all of these. In a lot of instances, two or three of these instruments, a positive finding on them will equate into a material injury finding. This is just to give you an idea of the process that we follow. I know that the first reaction is always that we take very long in doing these investigations. It helps maybe to see it visually how the process unfolds. This is the same process that would be followed by any other authority around the world. And I think a lot of time goes into giving opportunity for interested parties to provide information, for us to check this information, and for interested parties then to have access to whatever findings the Commission makes, to comment on those findings, and then for us to make a recommendation to the Minister of Trade and Industry for imposition of measures. So if you look at this process, you will see that we work on an average of 10 months for completion of investigation. We can impose provisional payments. Our average now is 6 months of initiation. These duties stay in lasting for a period of 5 years. And then there is a compulsory review, which is called the sunset review, that industry can ask for a review of the duties to stay in place for another period. 5 years. In most instances, when we come to the 5 year period, the industry will approach the Commission to say they would like us to review the duties, and some of our duties have been in place for quite an extended period of time. In somewhere 2011-12, we did an analysis of the comparative time frame, comparing ourselves with authorities around the world. And you will note that we compare very well. I think the two authorities that do better than us, Canada and Australia, of the ones that we have compared with, have legislative time frames, and we have found that this really could place the industry in a compromising position, because if you don't reach those specific time frames that are legislated, you could compromise the whole investigation. But we are happy with our time frames for several. You can always improve, but I think quality of investigations are also important. The second instrument is the countervailing instrument. This is the anti-subsidy instrument. So basically, you are looking at subsidies provided by a government and how what effect it has on the export price into South Africa. You can imagine that it is a sensitive instrument to use, because you're looking at government policy. So there's a provision in there to consult with governments, with the other government, before you go on with this process. And we have had some interesting consultations with countries because of this instrument. Countries are, in anti-dumping, you're looking at a particular exporter, so it's company-based. But in countervailing, you're really looking at government policy, and governments feel very threatened when you start looking at their own policy. So in the same vein as anti-dumping, you will have three legs to prove. You have to prove the existence of a subsidy, and the subsidy is pertaining to the product you're looking at, and then that this subsidized export is causing injury. So of course the link between the two remains the vital one in order to take action. The process that we follow is very much the same as for a dumping investigation, although we have to have a consultation. So before we initiate, we would send the invitation to the country concerned to indicate that we have received the application and we want to initiate. And in most instances, they would approach us for consultation to try and persuade us not to continue with this investigation. The process also 10 months for final measures and 6 months for provisional measures of the initiation. CAPOT is the third instrument. It's a bit different from the other two. It's not regarded as an unfair trade instrument, but rather a fair trade instrument. It's about the volume of imports that come in into the country and the rate at which these goods come in. And the requirement is, other than for the other two instruments, is serious injury as opposed to the material injury. We've seen an increase in the interest from industry on this instrument. It's not an easy instrument to use, and because you are basically affecting imports from all countries as opposed to in the other two instruments only from the particular country that you are targeting. There's a lot of attention. This gets a lot of attention. So basically, what you need to prove is that there's an increase in volume of imports as a result of some unforeseen developments. And unforeseen developments are interpreted to mean since our last concessions that we made in the WTO. And as we all know, unfortunately, the last time we made concessions were in 1995. So it becomes more and more difficult to prove these unforeseen developments. What was unforeseen in 1995 when we were leaving our commitment? Then you also have to prove that there was a surge, so it's a rapid increase in imports. You have to prove that there's serious injury and that there's a link between the surge of imports and the injury that is experienced. Like I said, it's not regarded as an unfair trade instrument. The duties are, if any, are applied against all countries, so it's irrespective of source. The industry needs to supply some adjustment plan to indicate how they will deal with this import, surge of import, because the safeguard is seen as a temporary measure just to assist industry to adjust. I've mentioned the consultation, and also there is a requirement to give consideration to public interest for safeguard mitigation. So it's a whole new element to investigation. You have to provide notice to public that there will be such a measure or conservation to such a measure, and public interest consultations are being taken. The process otherwise is the consultations a lot like the anti-dumping and countervailing process, with the feature that all the steps have to be notified through the WTO, and you also have to provide for consultations with all members who have a substantial interest in this industry. The two investigations we've done, we have completed the final measures within 10 months of initiation. The measures are in place for between 4 and 6 years. The agreement provides that if you impose for longer than 3 years, you have to do a half-year review, and also that if you apply for 3 years and more, you have to provide compensation to other members, or members affected. So normally, when measures are imposed, it will be for a period just short of 3 years. Just for interest, I thought I would tell you about the investigations we've done in the last financial year. You will notice that all of them, with the exception of the first one, are anti-dumping investigations. The size and potato chip investigations got a lot of attention from the European Union. They are the main exporter of this product to us. In the soda ash investigation, which is an interesting one for us, we don't have a soda ash producer in South Africa. So the soda ash producer is in Botswana, and we did the investigation on behalf of the government of Botswana. I think we also did anti-dumping investigation on frozen potato chips from the European Union. One that I'm sure that you all have read in the newspapers about is the frozen chicken portion. Then we've done this frontage reviews on welded chain link, on gypsum floor support, on wire rods and cables, and on tall oil fatty acid, where we maintain the use. Some of the interesting investigations that we have ongoing at the moment are the wheelbarrows investigations, origin of China. One that has also seen a lot of publication in the media is the cement investigation. We are also busy with three sunset reviews, being stainless steel rings, also from China, garlic from China, and slip and float glass from Indonesia. With regard to judicial reviews and disputes, I think it's not a new phenomenon in South Africa or in the international arena. About 50% of all disputes in the WTO are about trade remedy measures, which gives you an indication of how much is used and how much tension it is. A trade remedy investigation is contentious because you always have two interested parties, and unfortunately one of them will be unhappy when you are finished. Maybe that's also the reason why there's also always one party that is taken into trade court action. I mean, it's a business, so there's a lot of money involved in these investigations. But even that, it's a very small percentage of total investigations that are taken on review in the court, domestic court. We have not been involved in a full dispute in the WTO, although there have been a couple of notifications that they want to take the action, but they were resolved through consultation. That is the remedies. I will now give Marius to go to next.
Thank you, Nomolene Kudner, Honorable Chair and Members. I am Maurice Collins. I I see that we're running out of time, so it'll be a short stop if we can. It's not a long presentation. The International Trade Administration Act makes provision for the control of certain goods imported into South Africa through a permit system, and the Commission, through the Import and Export Control Unit, is responsible for the administration of this, this permit system. The import controls also subject to international agreements. South Africa is signatory to a number of international agreements, which include agreements under the auspices of the World Trade Organization, such as the GATT, 1994 GATT Agreement. There's various other agreements, Basel Convention, the Montreal Protocol, and United Nations Conventions and so forth, which import control also deal with. The purpose of regulating imports is, among others, to ensure health and safety and to protect the environment, to assist law enforcement agencies, and to comply with the international agreements as mentioned before. ITAC deals with various other departments, and we have well-established relationships with these departments and other entities which we deal with. To mention a few, Department of Environmental Affairs, Energy, Health, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the SAPS, the SARS, Customs Authorities, NRCS, ICASA and so forth, the National Gambling Board for Aviation and so forth. These are all offices that we deal with in the issuing and consideration of our import permit applications, and we have standing MOUs with most of these entities. From 1 July 1985, quite a few items were removed from import control, leaving 23% of total imports subject to control measures. At the time, this process continued, and currently there are only 276 tariff settings that are currently subject to import control measures. That is quantitative import control measures. The historical trade strategy of South Africa based on import substitution was therefore not only supported by high tariff protection but also by rigid import control measures. And these measures were applied both to agricultural and industrial goods. The following is just a brief summary of the goods that are subject to import control measures. I listed the tariff reading chapter with a description. The first one is fish and products thereof, which we control in association with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, oils and other products, fossil fuels, petrol, diesel, crude and so forth, which we deal with the Department of Energy. Then the next group of bullet points, the next five: inorganic acids, radioactive chemical elements, hydrocarbons, ethers, alcohol peroxides and so forth. And the chemical products are basically one group which are controlled by ITAC and the various departments involved in that, mainly the Department of Environmental Affairs, the SAPS and the Department of Health, Radiation Control Department. Pneumatic tires are controlled, in possession of tires. All tires that are imported are homologated by the NRCS, the National Regulator of Compulsory Specifications. ITAC will not allow the importation unless it is regarded as safe. Open and emission, controlled with SAPS, gambling machines with the various national gambling boards. Used and second-hand goods, the importation of all used and second-hand goods is subject to import control measures in terms of the ITAR Act and regulations published in terms of the Act. These goods are controlled for environmental reasons, health, safety and quality compliance reasons, as I mentioned in the previous slide. On export control, once again, the International Trade Administration Act makes provision for the control of exportation of goods, the system of permits. This permit system is also administered by the International Trade Administration Commission of South Africa. Export control also the subject of international agreements, same as under the import control, which include agreements under the auspices of the WTO, such as GATT 1994, including once again the Basel Convention, the 1988 United Nations Convention, the Montreal Protocol, and so forth. South Africa regulate exports for various reasons, for example, to assist law enforcement agencies in addressing exportation of stolen goods such as vehicles, which inevitably find their way across the South African borders to our neighboring states. We also ensure compliance with international agreements, for example, controlling the exportation of waste and scrap metals, also in terms of parcel contingent. To carry out the mandate, ICAC also associated with a large number of other departments and offices, pretty much the same as the Import Control Office, to name a few: Environmental Affairs, Department of Minerals, Energy, Health, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and so on. These departments are normally required to provide an input to ICAC to provide clarity in clear administration of export permit applications. We are currently 177 tariff lines that are subject to export control measures. As you can see, it's very, very little tariff lines that are actually controlled. These lines pertain to goods of the forestry sector, seeds and goods, minerals, energy, health, ferrous, non-ferrous, waste and fat, and also organic and inorganic chemicals. I have listed the main goods subject to export permit control. The first one being, once again, wattle seed of Chapter 12. That is a genetically controlled seed by the Department of Agriculture to ensure that South Africa maintain its place in the international market with regards to the bulk of the wattle tree supply to the tanning industries, international tanning industries. Precious and semi-precious stones are controlled, mineral fuels and oils of Chapter 27, once again petrol, jet fuels, diesel, various oils and crude and so forth. Human blood of Chapter 30 is also controlled in association with the Department of Health and the Human Tissue Act. There's a few woods that are listed there in Chapter 34, waste scrap of paper, tiger's eye, that is controlled for beneficiation purposes, and the Department of Minerals are normally contacted when we receive applications for exploration of tiger's eye. Then all the ferrous and non-ferrous waste and scrap metals that are being controlled, varying from Chapter 72 to 81. Exploitation of hydrocarbons, as I said earlier, also controlled chemicals in terms of Montreal Protocol, and chemicals from 1988 United Nations Convention against Illicit Trafficking, Narcotic Drugs and Psychotropic Substances, Chapters 28 and 29. The enforcement section of ICAC is responsible for enforcement of the provisions of the ITA Act, the regulations published in terms of the Act, and obviously permit conditions. Inspections are carried out. There are proactive inspections and scheduled inspections. Proactive inspections are normally container inspections, which are done without prior notification. Scheduled inspections or container inspections which we notify and which we tell the importer or exporter that we're coming to do an inspection that would normally be in the line of an audit. Once there is a non-compliance, the inspection will be turned into an investigation. The investigation will be conducted by our own enforcement officers. A docket will be opened. Once the docket is complete, it will be handed over to the SAS, the police services, and complete, and to and obviously ultimately to the MPA for prosecution. If necessary, ICAC will also seize the goods in question, and the ICAC officials will be required to testify in court. The financial year statistics. During the reporting period, 18,454 import permits were issued, which is over 14,000 export permits were issued. Import permits, the bulk of them,
3,700 we use for the importation of machinery and mechanical appliances, equipment and parts. Those are mostly in the manufacturing industries, metal working machine tools, earth moving, road making, mining, agriculture and so forth. A total of just over 2,000 permits, import permits were issued for vehicles and parts thereof. Those are issued to returning residents, immigrants, disabled people and so forth. Import permits for marine resources, chapter 3, 1,400, those are fish and so forth, 2,400 for rubber articles that include tires, chapter 40, and also rubber crumb. Repaint rubber, also used in manufacturing and processing of tires. 1,500 for arms and ammunition. 1,200 firms to import electric machinery and equipment of chapter 85, and 950 permits for metals of chapter 71 to 81. Those are also mostly scrap metals, waste and scrap metals that are imported into South Africa. Fuel permits were issued for mineral fuels and oils and their installations, and also organic and inorganic chemicals. The bulk of export permits, 6,400, were issued for exportation of ferrous and non-ferrous waste and scrap, chapter 71 to 81. There was also we're on the same slide there. Under 900 tons issued for exportation of organic and inorganic chemicals, exportation of motor vehicles, 559, and mineral fuels and so forth. Also a lot of export permits issued there. Enforcement activities are quite remarkable considering that we have five enforcement officers. Scheduled inspections and unscheduled or surprising inspections were done throughout the financial year. 792 scheduled inspections were done, 563 unscheduled inspections, and our unit have conducted 36 investigations, which ranged from sectors, from clothing, waste and scrap vehicles, automotive, pneumatic tires, machinery, and equipment. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We're really open for discussion. And I will start.
Thanks very much for the presentation. I've got a couple of questions. One is, because we've got you here, can you give us a heads up on whether Everett Harrisels is going to get its 10% import tariff as requested? So, is this a once-off division, or will it be granted across the board in the steel industry? In particular, what progress has there been on a similar request from some of the big players, such as Intel? Secondly, I'm curious to know what investigations have been undertaken to actually determine the extent of steel dumping by China and South Africa. What evidence is there to support the claims which are increasingly being made that steel is being dumped here by the Chinese? Then thirdly, your interactions with different departments in government, is there a uniformity of opinion about the desirability of import tariffs? The reason why I ask is because former Minister Emmanuel, for example, recently called tariff protection a double-edged sword that undermines competitiveness. Minister of the Presidency, Jeff Khadebe, was quite recently saying that maybe import tariffs weren't such a good idea. He said they can't just put steel tariffs up, it happens as the Chinese do the same thing. So I'd be curious to know from you whether you get the sense that there is discord about the desirability of import tariffs. And then finally, my fourth question relates to import tariffs on US chicken. As I said, South Africa currently prohibits, I think you actually reiterated this in the presentation, imports of all US chicken, including 55,000 tons of frozen bone-in portions, which is recently agreed to let in annually at normal tariff rates. But so far this year, we've accepted poultry from 10 EU countries despite an ongoing outbreak of avian flu there. What is the likelihood of the US ban being regionalized?
maintain, after maintain, I'll try to practice
it.
Okay, I'll maintain the first.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair, and let me join colleagues. Also appreciate the presentation. It was eye-opening. My question, what influences the tariff support? Does the ITEC initiate or business issues address? And the other one, you listed as the starting family. If you should increase the customs, you need to consult people. Now my question is, what if after your findings or motivation that you need to increase the customs, it's very valid and very reasonable, and if they don't support, are you still going to consider them? Not increase the customs, though it does have a negative impact on our trade.
Okay.
And then the other one, what incentives your investigation? Is it through tip off, or you sometimes just decide on operation here and operation clean? And also, okay, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I'm mostly covered by Dr. Collo's questions about the US poultry, but I was just if I get a little bit of clarity on it, my understanding was that because of the trade agreement was that we were going to have to put those trade barriers against importing poison chicken. So if you could just get a bit more clarity on that.
And over to
Isaac.
Local manufacturers like AMSA. I would like to indicate that currently we have 12 applications for an increase in customs duty on various field products. We have received an application from EMPRA, has sent on the structural field, and 10 of the other applications are from AMSA. And they include the steel products like the reinforcing bar, the rebar, the wire rod, some flex rod products, the other steel bars and rods, the cold bolt. And we are at an advanced stage with regards to the application for an input in customs duty on galvanized and painted flat steel, as well as the increase in customs duty on large wood most in hand. In terms of whether we are going to give the relevant parties tariff support or not, I would like to indicate that we are going to follow the same adjudication criteria that I have indicated, and depending on the findings that we are going to get when we conduct the investigation, we might propose an increase in customs duty, or we might reject it. But the decision on whether to increase the customs duty or not, it lies on the Minister of Trade and Industry. And then there was an issue. There was an issue that some of the ministers have indicated that they do not support trade increases, because it is a double-edged sword. Yes, in a way, one would say that it's not good to increase the customs duty, hence, especially for the sake of the consumers. Hence, we have implemented the principle of reciprocity with regards to the tariff increases, as well as putting the duties for a specific time frame. But on our side, we say in some cases it is important to provide tariff support if the industries are not competitive. But things must not end at the level where we just increase the duty. But we need to equip the industries, for instance, by assisting them through the restructuring plan so that they can be competitive maybe after 3 years, 5 years when we review the duty. So we'll focus mainly on the supply-side measures to assist them to competitive, to check what they can invest in, maybe in terms of skills development and training, what kind of advanced equipment that would require, for instance, if they've got outdated technology, like in the case of AMPER. And we'll also look at issues like R&D, but in the process as well, would ensure that employment must be created when the support has been granted. But what is going to be critical with the issue of the skill investigation is that when it comes to the charity support, sorry, the commitment that will be linked to the charity support is to emphasize that the developmental price strategy for the downstream industry, because there has been an allegation that arms are practicing in totality pricing. We need to go to a point by if we support the trade increases, but we'll have to legally bind arms to ensure that they don't increase their prices in line with the imported products in the situation whereby trade support is granted by the Minister of Trade and Industry. There was another question, whether what do we do if the other SAFO members don't agree to a particular tax amendment, for example, an increase in customs duties. So in most cases, we don't usually agree with each other, but we would still focus on the relevant criteria and prepare to the other SAFO countries what it has looked at. As well as showing what the benefit will be in terms of developing and supporting in particular in that. But we don't argue all the time on tariff arguments. But nevertheless, if one has not asked, we will still go ahead with them with the tariff and tariff arguments. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. There's also a question on the claims that have been made that China is dumping steel in the domestic market. The only applications we've received are for the ordinary customs duties. We have not yet received any application for anti-dumping measures. So thus far, those claims have not yet been substantiated in terms of a properly documented application to ITEC. The indications are that the industry has prioritized the ordinary customs duties as against making use of the anti-dumping measure. They might come back to us at a later stage, but for now their priority is on the ordinary customs duties. Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. I just want to give some information on the chicken story. We have DJI here, fortunately, so they can also assist on it. I think there are two issues. The one is the SPF measure, the other is the duty measure. So on the US, for example, we still have a quite significant anti-dumping duty on US chicken. But in terms of the AGOA negotiation, there was the 65,000 tons that the industry amongst themselves agreed to that. That will come in duty free. It hasn't happened yet. We haven't come to an agreement on how exactly it will be distributed and so on. But I have seen that there are also now outbreaks of avian flu in the US. So it will basically affect imports. With regard to the US of the EU chicken, there have been quite substantial anti-dumping duties imposed in the last financial year. But we've seen that there's been a downward trend in imports because of this FDA measure. I think the last of now lifted last week against the EU, so we expect imports to come in. The difficulty with the EU imports is in anti-dumping imposed against particular countries' duties. And you'll see that imports have switched to other countries. So you always have that. But yeah, the EPF measures are administered by the Department of Fisheries.
Thanks,
Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, maybe just on the issue around the poultry. The domestic industry is reaching an agreement on the 65,000 tons, but the domestic industry and the domestic industry in the US is still finalizing the specific agreement on this. Once the agreement is finalized, they would see a request to the minister to implement this agreement. That will then go to ISAC, of course, for doing the investigation and getting going through the public consultation process, especially in terms of the implementation and how that 65,000 tons will be distributed. That is still a ongoing process. The issue on the bird flu is critical, and it's an issue that we've been raising with the U.S. Continuously, that you can't link an SPS issue to, for example, the extension of a GOA. It's the same with the other issues surrounding pork and beef. These are specific issues in terms of if there's an outbreak, there's international standards. There's a specific project that needs to be followed by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries in terms of under which circumstances they can allow the product back in. Currently, there's been an outbreak in about 20 countries in the 20 states in the U.S. The first time we went to the U.S. this year, there was about four states, and from there it's expanded. It's now about 20. And there is a process ongoing between the vets from South Africa and the U.S., a very intensive process in terms of under which circumstances, once the TRP is agreed, of course, the product can be allowed into this market. It's difficult, it's a very complicated process. We're looking at regionalization. But how can the regionalization work and how it's implemented, what is needed for that's the current process that is ongoing. The one thing we want to allow in, of course, the U.S. chicken, but it cannot be to the detriment or to the in terms of how of our own unfold the industry, and that is what we are seeing at.
Can I ask Honourable Ranzin to repeat your question? I don't think they are like
you. Okay. I was going to ask you. Yeah. Okay, what influence is the investigation? Is it some people or just operation cleanup? And what influences the parish support? Does ATEC initiate or the business apply for support? And on SACU, if they are SACU affiliates, if they want to include the custom duty, if they consult the SACU family, if they refuse, are they going to leave it like that, even if it has negative impact on the economy? Thank you.
In my writers, there is simple thing. You know, I see that we have decided the number of employees who might not be enough. So we talk to the worker that is supposed to be dealing with change. But my one now, when I listen to the speaker, in terms of your spectrum, very simple, and how to help. But I was just thinking now on the issues of nightmare, that is legal, you know, in your job. Because we are, it seems that there's a lot of stuff that might be there. But if you go there, at least you can behave your competitiveness to other companies. Now, you only sometimes depend on staff or but if you can tighten up and you have a resources which is required, you can assist the company a lot in helping some of these.
Thank you.
I've already answered the issue of what we do if the other customers do not support the tariff amendment. With regards to what influences the decision on investigation, I made a presentation on the set criteria and the setup that we look at when we are conducting an investigation. For instance, one of the setups that we look at is the market share. We analyze the market share in relation to the check data to check if the industry is actually experiencing import pressure. And then determine whether there is a link. And then we also look at the issue of price differential to check if the particular industry has a price disadvantage in that maybe its products are sold cheaper than the imported product. But the need to we see that the imports are cheaper than the manufactured product. That's when you can see that the imports are having an advantage over the locally manufactured product. But we also look at the price and the cost structure in order to determine whether the industry is competitive or not, and also to compare the cost structure with the imported product, because we don't want a situation where we provide a duty and only to find that it's just because the local manufacturers are not competitive. And then with regard to whether we initiate investigations or receive applications from the industry, yes, I take also conduct proactive investigations that it initiates. They can be based on the request from other departments or any other interested part. So what I should do is to use the current questionnaires in order to collect the relevant information from the industry and then make a recommendation. But usually, about 98% of our applications, we receive them from the local manufacturer. We do have the questionnaires that they use in order to launch an application. And from the information that we receive from them, then we will conduct some sort of an audit to ensure that the information that they have submitted to ITEC is actually assurance.
Hello, Bruce. There was also a question on the workload. If you look at our core function, the need by industry for the instruments that we administer, the increased demand due to tough economic conditions, we are a bit overstretched in terms of our human resources. We have approached the parent department with regards to possible organizational development in response to the need. We are hoping that through those engagements, we will end up addressing this issue of ITEC's organizational development. So it remains a challenge. Question.
I just want to check if there are any preparations for renewed trade relations with regards to big countries and how their own influences in our markets will impact on the growth of our local suppliers and manufacturers. In particular, on the same poultry issue, I just want to check the extent to which the Brazilian poultry's influence or rearrange the price in our markets. I've heard stories about majority of our retailers now opting for some Brazilian orders.
Yeah. The committee visited the NOJEX in 2016 and was concerned that NOJEX was still not competitive. Even after terms of support, what is happening at NOJEX as we speak? And also, what were the conditions attacking the terms of support?
Solidarity Unit. The only information we know now is that there has been a recent company that has invested in the tobacco canning industry, which is Trade Concentrate. But we don't have information specifically on just because we haven't conducted the impact assessment or of the suit. But
Honourable Chair, on the BRICS question on Meki, Meki will also assist us on this one. Within BRICS, you have Brazil, the leading member in the original trade group in Mercosur that Meki spoke to. If you look at the differential trade agreement that we have with Mercosur, it's on about 1,000 tariff lines from a tariff book that covers something like 6,500. So it's a very limited preferential trade arrangement that we have with Mercosur, precisely because it would be difficult for South African manufacturers to open up for Mercosur and in particular Brazil, because they tend to be more cost competitive than the domestic manufacturers. Nikki was saying there is no talk about us having some free trade arrangement with China, precisely because we can just not compete on price with the Chinese. Such an argument would just erode the market share of domestic producers. So it's a grouping that we are in, but the members of the BRICS tend to be more cost competitive than us. That's the bigger challenge. And so one of the countries that we're exporting poultry to South Africa, Brazil was a major exporter. And so when we were increasing tariffs, those general rate of duties would apply to imports from Brazil. So it's quite challenging in terms of competition, just based on the cost of production.
Nikki, do you want to add something?
Thank you, Chair. I think Mr. Layard has covered all of the issues. Maybe that's the one thing we've seen in terms of the trade of poultry with Brazil, that they used to be the major exporter to the South market. And so about 2012, once the TDCA was fully implemented and the imports from poultry from the EU, or chicken products from the EU, was duty free. Now it's shifted, and the major exporter to this market is actually by far is the EU, or certain countries within the EU. And that's why when I talked about earlier, where you then get the problem of, we've agreed to a liberalization, now that it's fully implemented, it is creating some problems for the domestic industry, and that's why it's very important that LEM have the necessary tools, also in the trade agreement, in terms of which you can address this competition that the domestic industry is now facing, not from Brazil. We've increased the duty. I think that is addressing the competition from Brazil. But it's not addressing the competition that we are now experiencing from the EU. And in terms of the EDCA agreement, the bilateral safeguards that was in the agreement was only applied until 2012. That is what's also very important that we now conclude as soon as possible the EPA agreement be implemented, because in terms of that agreement that's incorporating all of our commitments in terms of the CDPA, we will have a safeguard, bilateral safeguard that's in place until the agreement comes to an end. So those are some of the challenges and some of the issues you need to be aware of in the negotiations. And India, as I've indicated, very difficult to negotiate with India. It's been 2 years now that the negotiations have really been shut down because it's difficult to get commitment also from the domestic industry in terms of where we can open up in this area, because they're very competitive and they're competitive on the product that they are an interest in, especially in terms of agriculture and many of the normal products.
I think I've not heard that question. And if that is the case, I'd like to thank DTI and ITEC for arming and sharing with us this relevant information and giving us some knowledge of the international trade instruments, so that when we do our work, we are aware of what we are supposed to do. I think it was very, very good. And we invite you in the future. I don't think we understand all issues that you wanted, particularly people that know more about trade and industry. By saying that, I would say the committee now stands adjourned. Thanks.